Good morning. It's March 19th. It's a cold morning in New York City, and this is your Indignity Morning Podcast. I'm your host, Tom Skoka, taking a look at the day and the news. The front page of this morning's New York Times is dominated by prospective news rather than retrospective news. The lead news story is that the Supreme Court, in oral argument, seemed like it won't be disposed to support states in their claim that the federal government should be barred from asking social media companies to take down misinformation. The justices pointed out that it is extremely normal for government officials behind the scenes to argue with reporters and to try to shape and influence coverage, and also questioned on what basis the states would have any right to sue over this regardless. The one justice most prominently swimming against the current was Samuel Alito, whose brain is fully marinated in the belief that a nefarious conspiracy of forces is keeping right-wing views from spreading as far as they deserve. But none of that is the decision. That's just the attempt to guess what a decision is going to be. Likewise, in the next story over, Gambia has advanced a measure to revoke its ban on female genital cutting, but it hasn't yet passed it. Speaking of the U.S. Supreme Court, the story reports that one member of the Gambian parliament argued that arresting people for genital cutting means they are being deprived of their right to practice religion. As the logic of Masterpiece Cake Shop, that you have a right to act harmfully and discriminatorily against other people, as long as you say it's your sincere religious belief, crops up in a discussion by an all-male legislature about why women and girls shouldn't be protected from genital cutting. Next to that is the semi-forward-looking news that experts have declared famine is imminent in Gaza, meaning more people will die predictable deaths on top of all the predictable deaths that have already happened. Lest anyone suspect that Israel's prosecution of the war was going to change course, the Israeli military went back and raided Al-Shifa Hospital yet again, saying yet again that Hamas officials were operating from the hospital. It came, the Times writes, 4 months after Israeli forces stormed the complex and found a tunnel shaft they said supported their contention that the armed group had used it to conceal military operations. That is one way, but not a very good way, of describing how the Israeli military claimed that Hamas had built a full-on underground central command center underneath the hospital, presented maps of this complex, and then found nothing even remotely resembling their own maps. Surely the intel was sound this time around, though. And then who knows if this counts as yesterday's news or next week's news. But a week before Donald Trump was supposed to put up a bond to cover his $454 million judgment in his civil fraud trial, his lawyers said he can't do it. The companies in the business of covering big bonds are unwilling to cover his, apparently because he can't scrape up enough collateral. And so, theoretically, possibly, pending some sort of legal reversal in Donald Trump's favor, which has certainly never happened before, except every other time Trump's back has been against the wall, then the state of New York would move in and start taking his stuff to try to pay the bill. In other news about what is and isn't legally possible, on page A11, Adam Liptak writes about talking to retired Justice Stephen Breyer in an interview in which Breyer tried to say something forceful about the Dobbs decision. Are they really going to allow women to die on the table because they won't allow an abortion which would save her life? He asked Liptak. I mean, really, no one would do that, and they wouldn't do that. They very much most definitely would. I'm not sure what more you would need to see from the aftermath of Dobbs to understand that a body count just certifies that they mean business. Then there are two big labor news stories in the paper. One, on page one, is about the Dartmouth basketball team's decision to unionize and Dartmouth's desire to fight it. Are athletes truly employees, the headline asks, meaning college athletes, since in the NBA there isn't much dispute about whether someone who plays a sport for which tickets and TV rights and merchandise get sold for money, is working for the people who are collecting that money and gets paid for that labor. But is there something magic about putting the name of a college on a jersey that changes the situation? You can tell that the Times thinks there is a difference because this story is on page one. Whereas the news that Volkswagen workers in Chattanooga, Tennessee, applied to the National Labor Relations Board for a vote to join the United Automobile Workers is only on the front of the business section. Even though the UAW is a major political force that drew President Joe Biden to its picket line in the course of a successful strike and is now challenging the geographic alignment that keeps Southern workers in non-union shops, This dramatic new development is a business story, because worker mobilization is a thing that happens to corporations, not a news story in its own right. You'll know college athletes have really made progress against their exploitation when the Times decides they are no longer of interest to a general readership. That is the news. Thank you for listening. Please subscribe to Indignity to keep us going. And if all goes well, we will talk again tomorrow.